Welcome back. Welcome back. Hour two of the Home Improvement Show for everybody here. Rich Orr is here for you today and having a great time, getting a lot of good questions, a lot of good thoughts. And I know we're running around. We're getting prepped. We've got a lot going on. It's a busy time of year. A lot of people, I have noticed traffic being somewhat better. A lot of vacation time taken during this time of year to be able to have time to get everything prepped and ready and bought. And boy, just very busy time of year for everybody. So if you have anything going on, you have any questions, thoughts, concerns about your house, honey-do list you're working on, whatever it may be, or maybe you got really just want to have a conversation about that next large remodel you've been thinking about, the kitchen, the bathroom, the home addition. How do you start? What happens? What's some good advice to get through that? There's a lot we can talk about on subjects like that as well. 314-436-7900 is going to find me right here. You can also text in if you have a question and you just want to listen to what the answer is for that question. You can text in also 314-436-7900. And a question I get quite often looking at larger remodeling projects. We at Mosby Building Arts, where I work and my day-to-day job, we do basically every type of full-service remodeling. And we get a lot of just like, how do you choose when to start planning for that large project? When do you contact? And really, if you kind of work that backwards and think about, well, I want to do my kitchen and I'd like to cook for Thanksgiving in it. If you work that backwards and go, well, you could have a couple months of someone working on that kitchen possibly. And then you go backwards again and you go from the time that I tell somebody, yeah, do my kitchen. They've got to order things. They've got to gather things. So there could be 2 or 3 months of waiting for the stuff to come in and that project to be ready to begin. You could be 4 or 5 months out after that. But then if you need any kind of time to figure it out, price it out, plan it out, maybe some designing, if you're looking at really moving things around and really doing a lot, well, you could have, again, 2-3 months or so of planning and designing a project like that. Then I would kind of look at it and go, wow, that could be 6, 7, 8 months. I would highly recommend starting no later than about 9 months before the time that you would like to have that project done to possibly see if you can work out and hit that timeline. So you're thinking Thanksgiving, you're going to want to be calling in January, February, something like that, to start that kitchen design and start getting that motivation moving and figuring out to have any chance at actually having that done by then. So soon, start very soon is the bottom line probably to most of that. It never hurts to start a little sooner, find out what you could do, and then plan it out and have that ready to go there. But hey, we've got some calls coming in. So we got Damon on the line. Let's jump over to Damon and see what's happening there. Hey, Damon, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I can hear you. How about you? Can you hear me?
I hear you very well. How can I help you, sir?
I have a brick home with plaster walls and wanting to insulate in between the two. The best way to do it?
So it depends on how that home is built. How old is your home?
Built in the 50s.
Built in the 50s. Because, I mean, basically, as long as it's not like a full masonry wall where, you know, it's brick, block, everything into the plaster, then there's really nothing to insulate on a full masonry wall. In the 50s, you have a good chance that it's what you got to find out is it a brick veneer, just a stacked up brick on the outside, and then a 2x4 wall with plaster, lath, and everything on top of that 2x4 to where you just got to make sure you have a space that you need to insulate. And that's the system that you would need to insulate in there.
Yep.
And that's not easy to do because basically, I mean, your two things are you either gut everything, insulate it, and then re-drywall and kind of remodel the whole thing, or they drill holes, which is much easier to do in drywall, where they drill a hole and then you patch and you plug. Basically every 14 inches, you have a hole up high and you have a hole down low. And they use those holes to send their hose in and make sure that it's getting through and filling up. And they fill that up with a blown in insulation in those cavities. And then you have two holes to patch every 14 inches around, or every 16 inches around that room where you've, you know, along all the exterior walls where you've insulated. And plaster patching can be quite a bit harder than drywall patching. So, and then you've got full paint job after that. It can get into a pretty big project to get those walls insulated.
I was curious to know if there was any foam that could be put in there, and I was worried that would just push the brick out and the mortar out. And there's about a 3-4 inch gap in between the two. So, like you said, blown insulation.
Yep, because even with, I've seen the blown, I would never recommend foam in there because of the expansion. Because I've seen this done, and I've been a part of projects where this has taken place, and I've seen the plaster walls blow out and kind of push out and crack. And need some fairly major plaster repairs from the blown in insulation. Not even just the regular blown in can do that. Not even just the foam. The foam, you're almost guaranteed it'll happen.
Yeah, I was worried about it actually pushing the mortar and the brick out. And I certainly don't want that. I'd rather have it be in the plaster, but I understand. I was just curious what the best way to go about that is.
Yeah. So, yep. That's the best way. And on your brick, if your house is built that way, you should have metal ties that tie the brick to the 2x4 every so often. They'll do one of those metal ties every 8, 10, 12 or something bricks high across that wall, like every other 2x4 or something. So every 32 inches or so, and every foot or so high, foot or 16 inches high, you should have a metal tie that's actually screwed or nailed to the 2x4. So that helps that from not pushing out that actual brick wall.
Okay.
Yep. So that's pretty safe. I haven't seen a lot of problems with the brick doing it that way, but I've seen plenty of problems with even with the plaster. Of just cracking and pushing out. You might end up with a whole wall somewhere to repair because of it, just the pressure against the actual lath and plaster.
That makes me think I might just want to take the plaster down or drywall.
Well, yeah, and I mean, by the time you get all through that, you might not be that far from it. I mean, there, if you do it the other way, if the plaster stays and you patch a bunch of holes, you don't need new base trim and things like that. So you do get into more window trims, base trims, all of that when you're drywalling. And you could also consider just taking all the trims off and basically drilling the holes and doing your drill the holes, do all the work, do the insulation, see how it works, and then make that decision, because it might be quicker and easier to just drywall over the whole wall, get new trims, than trying to patch all of those holes high and low, make them all look good, and then repaint everything anyways.
Oh, and leaving the major plaster up.
Yeah. Yep. Oh. And sometimes you go right over top of that plaster with your new drywall. Yep.
Okay.
Room gets a half inch smaller, but it's it's just a quicker, easier way, and you're not necessarily. And then if you have one wall, you end up needing to demo because it pushes out, cracks real bad. It's broken up. It's real soft. That's okay. You're only doing that to one wall rather than all of them. So that's something to consider too. That happens all the time. So, all right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey, you are very welcome. We're going to jump into a quick break. Don't forget, 314-436-7900 finds me right here. We got a lineup going on, Ray, Gretchen, and Phil. If you guys can hang on for a couple minutes, I'll take you in order as quick as we can right after these messages. All right. Welcome back. Welcome back, Home Improvement Show. Let's jump right to the phones. Don't forget, we'll have plenty of time after getting through some of these. 314-436-7900 finds me. Let's go to Ray and see what is going on in Ray's world. How can we help you?
Rich, I built a home in Kirkwood about 9-10 years ago.
Okay.
And I have concrete, porch, and patio, 3-foot foundation around the perimeter of each. They haven't settled, but they have hairline cracks in them. So I'd like to cover it either with stamped concrete or ceramic tile, or maybe even just dye the top. What would you recommend?
So is this, but the whole porch floor is concrete now, right? That it's good 4 or 5 inches. If it's on a foundation, it might even be a little bit thicker, like 5 or 6 inches thick. So I would recommend I wouldn't recommend more concrete just because of the thickness, the weight. I would recommend looking for a concrete coating company, and there's all sorts of different coatings you could put over top of that. I have seen where they have kept it looking like concrete. So they did like a random kind of stone pattern, and they spray this coating on, and they put little like tape and stuff where it would look like mortar, and they pull it out of there. So it gives it a little height and definition. So there's a lot of different coatings. I wouldn't put a stamped concrete or anything like that on top of it, because you really need concrete to be pretty thick to work well and last, and your coating can actually wrap the front edge of that porch, kind of the vertical side towards the ground. They can wrap that, they can and give it all the same look. So I would look more towards a concrete coating, different types, and there's a lot out there.
Do you know any brand names so I have an idea of the materials you're talking about?
No, I don't know any brand names of the coatings, because most of them are like, I mean, the one brand name you probably really wouldn't use is like the Cool Deck, like around the swimming pool. But a lot of these concrete coatings are very similar to that, as far as like the process, how it goes on, but they can get many different look. And you do have the I think it's a Pebble Tech or something like that, where they do the pebbles, kind of looks like an exposed aggregate. That's a really good way to do it, a really nice look. And the fine hair cracks are pretty common, and it's just concrete can crack. And those cracks get any wider, get too much of them, they can permeate through any type of coating that you put on. So the coating people should really know about the cracks, and they can do kind of like a Band-Aid over it. They can do an epoxy fiber over that crack if they are worried that it's going to permeate through later. They kind of do this patch, and then they kind of smooth that out, and then they put their coating over the whole thing. So that's a method they may recommend to help make sure the cracks don't come through. But if they're really fine hair, they're probably not going to be an issue anyway, because you're on a full foundation. So you should be really stable from that. So your cracks are normal.
Cool. Thank you for the insight as to what to use to decoratively cover them.
Yeah, no problem. Not a problem at all. Appreciate the call. Wish I knew more of the manufacturer types, but there's a lot of them. I just call a lot of Google coatings, concrete coatings, and you'll find manufacturers, and you'll find a lot of companies that do that. So let's jump over to Gretchen and see how we can help there. Hey, Gretchen, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right.
I have a question. It's a plumbing sump pump question. My hairdresser has a salon in the basement of her house. She has a sump pump. So does the next door neighbor who is on higher ground. And this past time, when we had those heavy high rains, her sump pump didn't quite work. But the plumber decided that the neighbor's sump pump was pointed in the incorrect direction of her house. And apparently this only happens when we have torrential rains. And my hairdresser has her sump pump, I guess, pointed out to the street away from the house next to her. So, and since then, the neighbor moved and the plumbing company went out of business who did the neighbor's sump pump pointed in the incorrect direction. That's what my hairdresser's plumber told her. And she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know whether to talk to the neighbor, or I don't know what. I just went there yesterday and she told me all this.
So okay.
No,
and I would definitely recommend that she talk with the neighbor and explain the situation and just say, you know, just tell them the situation, explain it and say, here's what my plumber's telling me. And it is very, very true that you want to get, whenever you have a sump pump and the pipe goes outside the house, you need to take that pipe away from the house 10 feet or further away from the house to a spot where it can run off downhill away from your house, because it will. All that water that comes out will just soak right back down into the ground. And if you just dump it outside your foundation, it's like recirculating the same water. So if theirs is too close to the property line, then it'll run towards her foundation and she's recirculating their water. That is definitely an issue that we see quite often. And if the other thing she can do too is if she's not getting anywhere with the neighbor and the neighbor's like, they're just not willing to work with her. They're not willing to do anything. They don't think it's an issue. I would recommend then checking with the municipality, the city where you live, about drain lines, like about bringing groundwater to the surface and where it's required that you do that, because there are rules in a lot of municipalities that say when you disperse groundwater like that, or water, if it's downspout drains from your roof water running, or if it's a sump pump drain like that, there's locations that they'll say not to put that. And usually it has to be at least like 5 to 10 feet from your property line. So if they put it real close to the property line, there's a chance, if they're not willing to work with her, that she could get the municipality to help force them to move that pipe if they have rules like that. And their rules are they stop so far from the street because they don't want you dumping it right onto the street. They want it on your property and running for a little bit before it gets to the street, sidewalks, or other properties.
I think she might be living in an unincorporated area of Afton. She would have to go to the St. Louis County department for that.
Yep, it would be St. Louis County if they're, yeah, unincorporated. Yep, that would
okay,
be the
well,
best
listen,
place to go.
Thank you for the help, and I'm going to tell that to her, and she's working with her plumber. So anyway, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. And maybe if her plumber's there, she could try and get him at the same time, where maybe he could help with that conversation, and they believe the plumber a little bit better.
Right,
so,
right.
Yep, they I'm sure they'd be willing to help with that. So, all right, appreciate it. Great question. And hey, I bet she appreciates you looking out for your hairdresser and trying to help out. Appreciate that call. We're going to jump into another quick break here, but Phil, I will get to you as soon as we come back from this right away. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Welcome back. More home improvement for you here. And we've got two more segments, another half hour for you. 314-436-7900 finds me. You can text, you can call in, get your questions in. We'll get to you as soon as we can. And speaking of that, we've got Phil on the line. Let's see how we can help Phil. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, good. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I got a house, 1951 house built, and I got some handyman issues, per se, where I got some bathroom commode leakage due to the fact that the toilet that was installed, this had to ream because the flange on the pipe was built into the flange. Well, the flange built into the pipe. So what is the best way to go about getting that resolved? And do you guys refer any handyman companies?
So I'm guessing, is the flange like broken and needs replaced? Is that why it's not working out, or?
You know, they had to, back in the day, the flange was part of the pipe.
Yes.
And so you can't buy a flange and put on, because then the toilet sit too high.
Yep.
So do they have a special flange for that?
So in today, yeah, the flange is still part of the pipe. And the common issues we see with the flanges are they, one, either get really old and end up breaking and won't hold anymore, or the other common issue is the floor gets built up, and then you get too much space between the flange and the toilet, and you get leaking that way because you're just not getting enough wax ring and getting that sealed very well. So that... generally, replacing that flange, it usually includes replacing that the part of the pipe that the flange connects to. They do make some little, if you look up, little pieces that can kind of mount over it. But yeah, you got to make sure you got that height right, because if you're adding on a piece on top of that flange, and then you can kind of mount it to the floor instead of the pipe, sometimes that can be successful. But really, to figure that out, you almost need a plumber to take that toilet off, see what's going on, see how the height is, and then try and recommend like what could work in order to get something in there to get that repaired. And generally it's going into the basement and cutting out some of that pipe also and putting in some PVC to it.
Be nice if it was a basement, it was a crawl space.
Oh yeah. So yep, they're crawling around inside a crawl space to try and get some of that changed. Yep.
So is there any handyman companies out there that you refer?
No, I would go towards, for something like that, I would go to an actual plumber, and depending on where you're at, like Kirkwood Plumbing, here at Mosby Building Arts, we have our own plumbing division. We have our own licensed plumber, but we don't do like plumbing repair like that.
Right.
So we would say try Kirkwood Plumbing is who we use for repairs and who we recommend out for repairs and things like that. When it's stuff that we don't take care of. We just use our plumbers for general remodeling. Like if we were remodeling your bathroom and you needed that stack replaced or that repaired, then we'd do it inside of that remodel.
Okay.
So, yep, I would find a good plumbing company. Hoffman Brothers is real good. They do plumbing, electrical, and HVAC. And then Kirkwood Plumbing is going to be more single line, just the plumbing. They would be good for that issue as well.
Do you know if any plumber service does subfloor work as well, like cutting the floor out and putting the floor down?
I mean, that I'm not sure of. Not all of them will do that. A lot of times they'll look at it, do whatever, and say, yeah, get your floor fixed, and then I'll come back and finish the project. If that's the case, then that might be something that we could handle at Mosby Building Arts, because we would come in and fix the floor and subfloor and do all of that in front of the plumber. Or at that point, then we could look at, do we just go ahead and do the plumbing, since there's more to the job than just the plumbing? So if they said that and you needed somebody, then we might be able to help you out.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. And I'll definitely call the plumber Kirkwood up and see what they say. We'll go from there.
Yep. All right. Good luck, Phil. Hope it works out for you. Hope you don't need subfloor repair too bad. But those things, they do. They grow. They get out there. They get out there pretty quickly. And the more you take apart, it's like that. They talk about the can of worms opens up, and the more you find what's wrong, and then you get into the subfloor. A lot of times, you get into a whole new bathroom floor. Then we're looking at a portion of a bathroom remodel, base trim, flooring, fix the subfloor. It just kind of grows like that. So if it got into all of that, then we could go ahead and figure out that whole project and have the plumbing included with the whole thing. We just don't typically run around doing just the plumbing repair. Now, we do have our SAM service, which is a service and maintenance program. It's not just call in and get a handyman, but it's a yearly subscription service. If anybody is interested in keeping track of their home and really having like a yearly inspection and staying on top of the game of when should you think about replacing things, kind of like Paula was asking about the furnace, when should I think about replacing that? They're saying maybe now. Well, we can have our SAM service where we'll do a yearly inspection or bi-yearly. We've got different programs. You pay a membership to it each year, and then inside of that, we can do some handyman hours and stuff once people are a part of that program. So I would say go, if you're interested, go to callmosby.com, callmosby.com. And kind of search for that SAM service, and there'll be some explaining and all of that, how to find out about that SAM service. And it's a great value. It's a great thing to help people stay, kind of like this show. It's like, how do we help the general public stay in front of their house, stay on top of it, and catch some of these issues quicker, sooner, and help out? Well, that's just our goal as beings, as a company. What we're just trying to do, the right thing for everybody as much and as often as we can. So check that out, callmosby.com. We're going to jump into our final break here. If you've got something for me, again, 314-436-7900. We'll find me in the last segment coming up here shortly. Don't go away. Right, welcome back. Here we are, final segment, final thoughts before Christmas here, final questions before Christmas. If you've got something, jump in real quick, 314-436-7900. But looking at what I was thinking about was something I've tried to touch on a few times here about getting two jobs, the procrastination phase that so many of us are in, trying to get to the appropriate time. When, you know, when can we get to a job? Why do people, what causes us as humans to procrastinate getting to some of these projects? And one of them, kind of like I was talking about with Paula, about thinking about the cost. We did have a text come in about doing the furnace sooner, because I was talking about it's going to cost less to get a furnace right now than it will 2 years or 4 years or 5 years from now. That's pretty much a guarantee. But one of the someone texted in also reminding that there's benefits of getting money back from the government sometimes on getting more efficient units and having, you know, off your taxes, some rebates from cities and states and the federal government. So checking that too, because some of those, I believe, have either gone away or going away. So that might be another reason to say, wow, if I'm getting $1,000 tax rebate because I've upped my furnace to something a little more efficient, that could be a good thing, and it could help you get into a better system that will save you some money. So that's another reason kind of not to procrastinate too long. But a lot of the reasons we do procrastinate, one is just the fear of not knowing. When you're thinking about a project and you're like, what are they going to find in my walls? What if the project drags out too long? What if the cost just keeps going up and balloons up, and just the fear and the uncertainty of all of that? Us as humans, we're wired to avoid the unknown. We want to know, even if the known situation isn't great, we want to know about it. So it's finding a reputable company that'll walk you through what to expect, how they get through that. Here at Mosby, we have what we call what to expect documents for different stages and phases of going through our process, and saying, okay, we're going to do a walkthrough with all the trades. Here's what to expect during that. We're going to start construction. Here's what to expect. We even have one for the time frame between signing a construction agreement and we start. Here's what to expect of what will happen during that time. Another big one, of course, is the cost, the investments, the budget anxiety of just, will you be able to afford it? If you can't, people worry about the hidden costs, the surprises, the overruns, financing. How much does financing cost? There is some great financing options out there today that really help a lot of our clients get into projects. Mention that when you're having us out to look at a project, or mention it to anybody. Here's a big one I see often is just the overload of decisions. It kind of a, we call like a paralysis, a selections paralysis, that there's so many choices and the choices are so overwhelming. It's just hard to get to the end. It's hard to make a decision and pick everything out. So having a company like Mosby Building Arts, have that designer help you through that and assist you in those decisions, seeing everything at our design center, picking through stuff, going shopping. If you don't see anything, everything that you like there, that's just all a part of how we make it easy for all of our clients to get through that process, so we can assist you in not having too many choices and getting through them. Another one is just the fear of the bad past experiences that people have had, and they're always coming back. And they're worried and they're like, okay, I've got scars from the decision-making process last time. I had delays, I had dust, I had miscommunication, I had a contractor who vanished and it took forever to get it through. So they have trouble getting into the next project because they're just worried that that's going to happen every time. And going back to that reputable company that talks about and thinks about all that is going to help you through that for sure. And then there's this was mine. I spoke a lot in the past couple, 2-3 months about my doors, ordering my doors, trying to get them, getting them installed, how I was thinking about it for like 5 years about replacing these doors. And so I was also a member of the there's never a good time syndrome. I'm looking for the perfect time to get a project going, and life is in the way, the holidays, the vacations, the school, guests, weather, all the different things in life. There's never going to be a perfect time. So if you really just try and pick the least inconvenient time, I just met with somebody on Thursday morning, and she said she took the rest of the year off for all the busyness, Christmas, everything, and she's doing all of her adulting in 3 weeks at the end of the year that she missed out on the whole year. And that's what a lot of us are doing. That's what we're trying to do to get through it. And then another good one is just the emotional attachment of the house. It was grandma's kitchen. It's the kids' bathroom. It's really not in that bad of shape. I'm worried. I want to keep some of the sentimental stuff. Well, working with someone that can help you do that and help you through that would be great too. That's something that we could do in getting through all that. But hey, we're totally out of time, so don't procrastinate. Take care of your homes. Be good. Be good to each other. Be good to your homes. And I will look forward to talking to everyone next week.